BSing with
who?
BSing with
what?
BSing with Sean K. BSing with
who?
BSing with
what?
BSing with Sean K. BSing with
who?
BSing with
what?
BSing with Sean K.
Welcome to BSing with Sean K. I am your host, Sean Neese, and on this show, I BS with people pursuing their creative and intellectual passions from all walks of life. And if you've been listening to this a while, you'll know that one of my interests is voice acting and voiceover work, aside from doing this podcast and other artistic endeavors. And recently, I took a class on Zoom with Actors Connection with Paul Liberté, was the teacher, and in the class was also my two guests today, Kevin Connolly and Danny Kramer. And Kevin Connolly is best known for being on Full Metal Alchemist as Fury, and also in League of Legends as the first Vladimir before they had two other Vladimirs.
Yes.
And Danny Kramer, you are the gym teacher on Pokemon.
The gym leader.
Gym leader.
On gym Pokemon. Leader.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've also been on Yu-Gi-Oh! And I get as anime is a lot of what you've done, right?
Yeah, that's mostly, and commercials, yep.
Yeah, and I'm still, I've done a couple of, like, indie projects. Like, I just did a short, stop animation short for a project in Chicago where I voiced two characters. I just wanted to have a chat about the voiceover industry, how you guys got into it, and maybe I could learn something for you guys, and you guys can learn from each other, too, so... Who wants to go first, like, say, like, how you got into voice acting and, like, your story?
Kevin, would you like to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. It's as they say, one of the kind of the classics, being at the right place at the right time. I became interested in voiceover in grad school. This was 20 years ago, so... information and technology was not either invented or easily accessible as it is now. So I finished grad school, I moved back to Texas, and I just began looking for every single voiceover book I could find, talking with other actors, and seeing just what information I could gather and learn about it and find out what the process is, because it's obviously very different than TV, film, and theater. Though I'll add to that I had a great my undergrad acting teacher, great actor named Richard Jones, once said that acting is acting, but what changes is the stage you're performing on and learning the techniques of that stage. And that really kind of clicked, especially with voiceover because of mic technique and all that thing. Anyway, so I was working at a children's theater at the time. I was a light designer and set construction and actor and all the stuff. And at the time I was living with my folks, and my dad saw that I was reading all these voiceover books and had asked me about it. I said, well, yeah, I'm in the voiceover world. So basically his best friend in Dallas had an office in a little building that down the hallway was a voice actor named Bob Magruder, who I think he was the narrator on a show. I'm forgetting the last, it's an anime that ends in Tales. I can't remember. Great actor and voiceover actor. And so I got to meet with him privately for about 2 hours. And he talked about his radio career in Dallas and voiceover. And he had a studio in his office. So he had me read a couple things. And he mentioned that he had a class in Houston, a one-day class that he did with a business partner. So I moved to Dallas, started doing theater. And he said, I swear there's a point to this story. I just keep babbling. So I emailed him. I said, hey, we met a couple months ago. Let me know when your next Houston class is. I would love to take it. And he says, Kevin, I've got a class in 2 weeks here in Dallas. Send me $100 and you're in. So I wrote my check and sent it off. Now, in the interim, I had dinner with a fellow actor. She was actually at the children's theater with me years before. And we chatted about she had just moved to Dallas with her husband at the time. And I had moved there for, you know, to kind of advance my career. And she said, I want to learn about voiceover. I said, so do I. She said, we'll help each other out. And the next day she said, Kevin, I found this company called Funimation. And I think they do something with Japanese cartoons. I was like, okay. So I called them up. I said, hi. And I said, what do you all do? They said, well, we do the English dubs for Japanese cartoons. I said, okay, well, is there a casting director or do you go through a specific agency? I'm just trying to gather information about how I might be able to get involved. They said, oh, just send us your demo and we'll put you on the audition list. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. I'll send my demo in. I hung up. It's like, I don't know what a demo is, but I'll find out in class. So get to class. And we're basically on the first floor of this little building. It was a talent agency as well. I think it's still there, McAllister Talent. So we're in a semicircle, about eight of us, you know, and it was kind of like the, you know, when you're a new student in school, like, hi, my name is Kevin. You know, I just got my master's, but I don't know about voiceover. Well, two seats down, this guy says, hi, my name is Mike McFarland. For the last 5 years, I've been an actor, writer, producer, and whatnot for Funimation. And I'm looking to branch out into other areas of voiceover. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to talk to this guy, but I don't want to make it, you know, like clingy or whatever, you know? So all morning we're reading copy of different, mostly commercials. You know, this was commercials, industrials, promos, that kind of thing. We go to lunch and I come back a little early and I'm just reading a book and I hear this voice say, so you're from San Antonio, huh? And I look up and it's Mike. And I'm like, yeah, I just moved here. I'm doing some theater I'm interested in voiceover. And I try to be real nonchalant about it. It's like, so you're with, was it Fun Times or Funimate or something like that? It's like Funimation. I'm like, yes, that's it. Yes, it's so funny. I just called. I just heard about you guys. And they said to send a demo in for the audition list. And so I'm hoping that, you know, we were going to get into information about demos in class. But then I said, I'd love to maybe I could pick your brain if you're okay with that, you know, through email or a phone call in the future. And he kind of rolled his eyes when he said, oh, the audition list. And I was like, what? I just did the lean. Do you see that, Danny? I just did the lean and Sean for class.
Oh, yeah.
he said, the audition list is a 2-year wait. I'm like, oh, well, I've got 2 years to figure out how to make a killer demo, don't I? And he said, you know what, Kevin, you're trained. I like your voice. You've got good control of it. You've got experience. Give me your contact info and I'll bring you in for something. And 2 weeks later, my very first show was Case Closed. And it just started then. And I've been very lucky hope to continue to be lucky in the career. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it. So Danny, I want to hear your story now.
Okay. My story. I'll try to keep things somewhat brief so it doesn't go on too long.
Is that a dig? I'm sorry. I just keep babbling. I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
No, my story could end up being longer than yours.
Let's hear it. Come on.
So basically, I went to Manhattanville College and I absolutely loved it there. And I'm trying to put my placement right. Okay. And I went there initially to study medicine and science, but that wasn't really my thing. So I eventually started taking more of an interest in communications and television. I really found that really fascinating, and I really just loved that, especially like speech giving and stuff. I was really, really good at that, and I had a lot of friends that were like, oh my God, you should somehow utilize that. And I'm like, yeah, but how? Like Stephen Colbert, get a talk show, whatever, what am I going to do? So eventually I started studying about filmmaking and acting and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay, I did a lot of acting in grade school, middle school, and high school, and a little bit in college here, but like, I'm not an actor. There's no way. I can't do this. But I can like edit and direct and stuff like that. So I started going into that and I started doing a lot of editing and directing of student films and everything. And eventually when I graduated, I got a great internship with a sports company that did stuff with ESPN and MSG Varsity. And eventually I started working with a production company called iImagine, which actually my mother had worked with back in the 80s.
So these
were old friends of hers. And when they were like, oh, Danny does film stuff, well, let's see what he can do. And they were like, okay, we want to work with you. So I started doing a lot of work with them. They're like my uncles now. They're just so amazing. But for the main story for how this gets into voiceover is that we were doing a commercial for, I'm not sure if I can say the name of specific companies we were working for, but it's a well-known company. It's a respectable, great company. Like I just don't want to get in trouble.
Sure. Yeah.
But they great company, big place. We were doing a it was actually an internal video for like safety and stuff like that for them. Mm. And they had a studio that we could use to voice over same day so that we could quickly turn this around. But the voiceover talent wasn't able to make it. So it was like, oh, shoot, what are we going to do? And the producer, as well as the client, was like, hey, Danny, like, we've been talking with you, because I was working as like a grip that day and audio work as well. And they were like, you have a great voice and you have some acting background, right? Why don't you do the voiceover? And I'm like, I'm not a voiceover actor. And they hand me the script and they're like, you are now, get in the booth. And like, I was like, okay. So I did it. They really liked it. They even had me then come into the studio back at iImagine's place to do some touching up on the voiceover and add some extra parts. And it was really great. And then I ended up having other commercials that I was referred to personally from different friends and coworkers. And eventually the audio engineer, as well as one of the producers at iImagine, were like, hey, you know, you could like make a thing out of this, you know, like really go into voiceovers with commercials. I'm like, okay, sure. And they knew a place where all these people that had worked on like Pokemon and all this other kind of stuff had gone. And I'm like, yeah, it was called Actors Connection in New York City. So I went there. I started taking classes with Paul Liberti and a number of other teachers. But really, Paul, like, I learned so much from him. It was so amazing. And it totally changed how I approached anything with acting. But one of my main foundations for acting came from college, the Sanford Meisner kind of method of like living truthfully under
interesting
circumstances. So I was able to really, like, really apply that. And there was another technique that I learned from another great teacher at Manhattanville, which is about like a circle of awareness, which is that you don't be aware of like every little thing that's going on. If you're in a scene, it's between you and the other person. And in this case, the other person is an imaginary person or an imaginary situation. So it was pretty easy for me to get into that kind of stuff, because I already had a great foundation of being taught like really good fundamentals for acting.
I want to just interject, yeah, for your listeners, that is a huge key. I think there's so many people who, you know, they're told, oh, you've got a great voice, you should
it's
do voiceovers.
All about the voice, right. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, but what you just said is such is I think almost is the bigger factor, is to be trained in a technique. I'm like, I've been wanting to study Meisner for a while, because mine was Stanislavski, but I think what you just said is so important for people to hear and understand, that you've got to have that great acting foundation that you got. I think that's fantastic.
I mean, for anybody who wants to get into voiceover, just quick sidestep for my story, just definitely study acting first. I know it seems like so many steps, but that's so important.
You have to
go into voiceover and study acting as you're doing it, but it's going to be so much easier for you to understand a lot of the concepts that are being asked of you
if right.
you study acting first. And then as I was working with Paul, one thing that he said, and I think this is really important, especially for character acting, I was like, Paul, I love doing the commercial stuff, but like the character classes, oh man, I'd love that. And he's like, it's super competitive. Okay. And you have to be able to make a character like that.
Yep.
And like, it's hard. Like, especially, like, you've never done that before. Of course it's hard. Because approaching a commercial is like, what tone? You know, I'm just myself basically. But doing character stuff, it's like one of the biggest things that helps is taking improv classes. Like
Yes.
That's like, and that was magic for me. Like being able to just switch and, you know, and learning the fundamentals of improv, which helps you a lot with making a character, because then you're not trying to scientifically create this character. You're coming more from like, okay, what sort of voice do I give him based on like different aspects of how
right.
they look? And then what am I thinking of this character? What are they going to do? How would it work? Like, there's a lot of fundamentals from improv that help with that process. But,
see, I'm way behind on my improv. I need to get some more improv training desperately.
You're already great. I mean, you're just going to get even better. But
stop. Here's the $20 I owe you.
But just to finish the story really
quick. Yes, please.
I eventually took a director's class, because they'll have casting directors come in and give classes. And this was with Darren Dunstan. He was the director of Yu-Gi-Oh! Specifically, he directed 5D's... Hold on. Zexal. And at the time, he was currently directing Arc 5. So I was... you know, I took class with him. You know, he and I got along really well and just seemed really cool. But then eventually he was like, hey, would you want to audition for Yu-Gi-Oh? And I'm like, yeah. And eventually I got an audition for the character of the Shepherd from Yu-Gi-Oh! Brains. Mm-hmm. And I landed that. And I was like, oh my God, what? And it was really, you know, like they called me for callbacks. And then I did stuff for them to just make sure I was ready. And it was like, yeah. And that was incredible. And then I just got to meet the past Yu-Gi-Oh! Actors. I met Erica Schroeder and Dan Green. And it was just so awesome. And then eventually Erica Schroeder was like, would you like to meet Lisa Ortiz? And I'm like, I met her and I took classes with her and Erica and Jennifer Sookup, and they got to know me. And then eventually Lisa sent me an audition for Pokemon, and it was for Raihan. And it was like, you're Raihan now. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy. Thank you. So, yeah.
And I think that's a big note as well, because there was someone, I won't say who, but from our class, who said that she sent her demo to Funimation because she wanted to work with them. And I think the process that you went through, that you need to really be heard. And so going to classes is where you can get cast out of. Because as far as I know, at studios, there isn't someone receiving those demos and saying, oh, I must listen to this right now. There's no one whose job is just to listen to demos. That's not the job of a production studio.
It's kind of like if they know you
better. Right? Or if there are, they can have a huge backup.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how many auditions, how many demos are they getting mailed every single day? I mean, just piled. Like I said, when I was, this was 20 years ago, in 2004, it was a 2-year wait to get listened to. Because the job of a production studio is not to listen to demos, it's to produce anime, and they need to work with actors who understand the dubbing process, because even that in itself is an additional skill. You're two actors in that, because you've got to be the timing actor as well as the creative actor. Yep. You know, so there's another phrase that I had, the two things from my undergrad, which I think you touched on, and love to hear if you have anything more to add to that, but one of his mottos is, your competition is working harder than you. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to getting demos produced and taking classes and educating yourself. Because you had mentioned, you know, that when you first, who was it? Was it Paul that said, you know, this is a very competitive business, especially in the animation arena.
That's right.
Which can terrify, you know, I mean, it terrifies me still to this day.
It was certainly a warning of just being like, know what you're getting into if you're going into this. Like,
right.
Go for it. Love it. But just know it's tough.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And you have a very Don LaFontaine story of how you got in. If I recall correctly, you know, he was a producer of movie trailers. And one day the actor didn't show up. And so they put him in the booth. And then he became the voice of movies for decades. I think that's fantastic. That's awesome.
Thank you.
You know, again, right place, right time, and you were ready. Yeah.
Really,
I love it.
It really is. Life is so funny like that. You know,
if I had it right now, I pulled up a quote from Michael Keaton, who was one of my favorite actors. I mean, he's my Batman. I mean, I'll say that right there.
I understand. Yep.
But, you know, he obviously went and did some independence, and his career had kind of, it didn't stop. It just kind of disappeared for a while. And I read an interview with him about how Birdman came about, the casting of that. And he says, I don't know what it is, but when you really focus on something and put all your energy, you just create it or something. And I'm finding it to be very, very true. Yeah. And I think your story.
Luck favors the prepared.
Exactly.
It's sort of almost like that in a way. There's lots of different ways to say it, but it's the same idea.
It's the same. If you are prepared, then don't judge, but I bought the David Hasselhoff when he did Jekyll and Hyde on DVD on Broadway. But there's an opening interview with him, and he said that luck is just taking advantage of an opportunity.
Yes.
Absolutely true. But to add to it, what you just said is you have to be prepared for it. And I love that. I love your story, man. That is fantastic.
Thank you.
So many great. I'd love to chat about Meisner sometime, because again, my undergrad was Stanislavski, and then my grad was Strasbourg. Mm-hmm. But if I recall correctly, Rutgers. I almost went to Rutgers. I was in school, and I think they're exclusively Meisner. But mm-hmm. I've never studied it. And I'd love to chat more about that sometime.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. Fantastic.
Okay, we've hijacked enough from Sean. Sean, it's your show.
It was fun. Yeah. I thought maybe it was like I was. It was interesting seeing. I guess Kevin being the interviewer too.
Now we stop. I'm so sorry. I'll shut up now.
It's all right. but I agree with that. Like, you kind of have to be in the realm of where you want to be, though. Like, whether it is, like, right now, you know, I'm auditioning. I'm doing a podcast. For a while before this, I was doing a lot of improv in the city. I had a weekly improv team for a while. But
oh wow.
Yeah, and we performed at the Triple Crown Theater. I also took like classes at the Pit. I was on the Improv 2 at the Pit, and then I took like one or two like drop-in classes at the Magnet. And then there was a meetup group I went to a lot called Improv Now, and I actually did another episode on that earlier on about improv and stuff. But
I'm just gonna plug the Magnet Theater and say that they're awesome, and that's where I took my improv classes. They are really awesome.
Fantastic.
I'll totally go with them.
Yeah, but I know it's like different. It's like a little different from the, like, I guess like the way the Pit and the Magnet work is like different schools, I guess, kind of. But I've taken more of like the Pit, I guess. But but for Magnet, it's just been like dropping classes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but one thing is like tying that with like regular acting is like I'm still trying to figure it out, because like using that improv way. That improv method with a scripted performance is a bit of a challenge for me still. Well, but I think it's like if you know it thoroughly, maybe if like the more you, like it's memorized and you just kind of know it. But then with like voice acting, you aren't really memorizing the lines, so that kind of brings in another challenge.
The improv is mostly for being able to create characters on the spot, because any improv situation you're going to be brought into, it's going to be like, okay, you're playing a dad who is addicted to collecting baseball cards and he has a really bad case of hemorrhoids, go. And it's like, exactly. How do I, okay, all right, and you have to sort of pick a lot of things at once to do that, and the more you sort of put your brain into that realm of quickly making these characters, the better it is. Like, the brain's like any other muscle, including with acting or voice acting. The more you work a certain muscle, the more you work a certain ability, the faster you get and the more efficient you get at being able to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I did come up with one of my my characters that I used in a short I did, and when I was doing like an improv, when I was doing that weekly improv team, the one that kind of talks like this, and he's very, you know, animated, like that. Like I use that for a voice acting thing I did recently too.
Well, if I can add to, you know, I love what Danny just said, that, you know, the improvisation is to help with character creation. And in fact, I really love, I mean, I've not been paid by Pat Fraley at all, but Pat Fraley has Pat, I just plugged you again. No, I've never actually taken his classes, because as amazing as he is, his classes are a little in the upper dollar level, out of my realm at the moment. But he does offer a lot of things on his website, some of his class information. And he has a 25th anniversary, more like 32nd anniversary now, of his creating characters. And he actually has a process that he uses, an improvisation process, but with certain steps. And if you Google, or if you go to YouTube and look up Pat Fraley Krang audition, he had 2 minutes to come up with the voice of Krang. And he talks, he goes through his entire process in that 2 minutes, and came to have the Krang, who's the villain from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, he's original. And it's absolutely amazing. But then the added step to that is to having been trained in some type of acting process, an acting technique. Because that is what, for me, guides the entire journey of the character you've just created through improv. Discovering the emotional, you know, ups and downs that they go through, and what their story is. And so having a technique to layer on top of the character creation, that's where you're going to get that three-dimensional performance from, in my opinion.
Krang video is definitely on YouTube, so...
Yeah.
Interviews about how he did it. So
yeah, it's and I think the anniversary audio. I mean, I listen to it once a month, and you know, you get a little PDF of the process, and he's amazing. It's just another tool in the tool belt of creating characters.
But do you think kind of just taking someone you know and kind of becoming that part, like just pulling from different people you know, or
putting
them in the situation could help too?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's as Johnny Depp says, though, that's the, you know, I remember watching him on Sleepy Hollow saying that part of his Ichabod Crane was the optimism of Ronald Reagan and the the jumpiness and fear of a 14-year-old girl in a horrible, you know, in the soup of the character creation, as he says, you know. And everyone has their own process. I mean, that's why there's so many different techniques. You've got Strasberg, Stanislavski, Meisner, Uta Hagen. My acting teacher at UCLA wrote his own book, you know. There's the Actor's Studio. I mean, there's all these different processes. Because one process, you may take Stanislavski, Sean, and say, you know what, I just don't get it. But then you may say, well, let me do this Meisner class. Oh, this connects.
And that's literally how it was for me. Acting was, you know, all the times that I was studying it, I was just doing it for fun. And there was a lot of, you know, advanced techniques that I was trying to grasp, but I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I don't know, middle school and high school. But then when I started taking these classes that focused on the Meisner technique, you know, living truthfully under imaginary circumstances, I was like, that's acting.
Okay, the light bulb happened. I love that.
Yeah. So, you know, so each technique exists because everyone's different and there's going to be a group of people that are able to comprehend.
So you recommend like taking different acting classes within the different techniques, like the Meisner.
Talk about that, you know.
There's actually a couple of books, and I'll before I leave, I love collecting acting books and different things. There's actually a two book series that each chapter gives the basics of all the major acting techniques. That might just be a place to start, and just say, okay, you know what, this doesn't make sense to me. Like, I mean, like for me, and it may not make sense at first. Like I had, like I said, mine was Lee Strasberg in grad school, and my first year, I didn't get it. I did not get it at all. I mean, we were doing the whole drinking the imaginary orange juice thing, and I'm like, I just don't understand. And I was frustrated. But then in my second year, we did an exercise that took elements of everything we had done in the first year and put it together. And just like Danny said, it was like, oh my gosh, now it makes sense, you know. Now someone else could go through 3 years of that and say, I just don't get it. It just doesn't work for me, you know. So yeah, there are resources just to find out, just to get an overview of each technique. And then what you just said, Sean, maybe take an intro class. If there's a Meisner intro class or a Actor's Studio, or a Strasberg or Uta, whatever, or even just buy a, you know, Uta Hagen, was it Respect for the Actor or any Stanislavski book, you know, and just give it a read and say, okay, this makes sense. I'm going to try this and forget that one, you know.
And see, so funny, even within a family, my mother studied Uta Hagen. And for me, it's like, okay, I appreciate that. And
then I tried. I read character. Maybe, I think, Danny, we might have had the same reaction. Like, what? What? Okay, this works for people. I'm going to put it over here. Like, I did just pick up. I'm really intrigued. And I don't know. There's actually a name for it. But it's kind of the technique that David Mamet created with... who's the actor from Shameless and Fargo? William H. Macy. Okay. I just picked up that book last week that I'm going to dive into this week about their acting process, because David Mamet is...
Yeah, because I've taken a lot of classes at the Barrow Group is where I started, and HB Studios. And I took a Shakespearean acting class around here in New Jersey.
Perfect.
But I don't think any of them like focused on a particular teacher. I did read the Stanislavski
and Actor character.
Prepares.
An Actor Prepares.
I really liked, like, he talked a lot about relational memory. And another thing I liked was he said something about like if you're playing a character that has different experiences, you can kind of let your empathy like expand. Like using your empathy to kind of expand your perspective that you might not have experienced what a character experienced, but you can use your empathy and imagination to kind of put yourself in the shoe. Yeah. Like your empathy shouldn't just include you and your, and I like that a lot.
And that's fantastic for you. I mean, I'd really take a moment to say, you know, you just had a connection with that, and that's fantastic to hear.
Yeah. A connection. Oh, a connection with talking about it.
To the process, to that particular process. Yeah. You know, again, because just like what we just said about Uta Hagen, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to put that book down for now. I read it. I'm proud that I read it. But, you know, some people, you know, just like any other acting technique will bow at the altar of Uta Hagen, and rightfully so. If it makes their artistic journey absolutely amazing for them, for me that's the key. If it makes your creative process exciting and fun and scary. I've recently realized I've got to start scaring myself again to really enjoy, auditions and projects. I think that's the biggest gift that you should get from a technique, any technique that you take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you guys market yourself and everything? How does that go?
Ooh, I'm terrible at marketing. I hate to schmooze. I've got a friend of mine who is, he was a lead on Desperate Housewives, and he has the art of the schmooze. He knows exactly how to talk, what to talk. And he's been on, once he started that show, he's been on TV and movies ever since. And I don't know how he does it. I've been lucky enough where it's just people I've met. Like at Funimation, I feel bad half the time because I don't necessarily watch everything I've been involved with. I'm a Star Trek comic book guy. Hopefully the fans won't hate me for that. But like at Funimation, the way they used to work is like I'd be called in for a show. I'd go, let's say it's a 2-hour session, and we're done in half an hour. Well, then I'd be walking out the hallway and another studio might open up and there's another different director who says, Kevin, you're here, get in here, and yank me in and say, okay, you're voicing this character now. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I was at a small convention last year in Ohio where someone came up and said, oh, I loved you in that episode in this so-and-so series. I'm like, am I in that? I had no idea. Because again, it was just being yanked into a studio. And so a lot of that stuff, And that actually was what led me into being able to connect with Bang Zoom out here, where I was able to say, look, this is my resume. I'm at, you know, Funimation, you know, and they knew me. They knew of me, I should say, and were very generous and brought me in. And that has led into getting emails from a couple other studios that I have no idea who mentioned me. That's how I started doing stuff for like Netflix. Where with some of the live action foreign dubs, someone sent me an email from, there's a company called VSI that does a lot of the Netflix dubs. And they said, yeah, someone recommended you and we'd like to bring you in for an audition. And I'm like, okay, sure. Now, that is not to say that I really, really need to learn how to market myself better. And that's something that I'm researching now, because that's, it's, you have to be seen to be noticed. You know, it's not just, in my opinion, not just the audition notice. You know, how about you, Danny? So how do you market the fabulous oral services you offer to the ears of all your fans?
Thank you. Well, I'm still very new. I mean, I've been studying voice acting for 5 years and studying acting longer, but you know, in terms of actually getting out there and like now, like being a professional voice actor and all that, it's sort of like I'm discovering as I go along and talking to people and hopefully not bugging them too much when it comes.
Yeah.
I
that's a fear I have too.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, thankfully I've had a couple of people that I spoke to, very prominent people who are so wonderful that were like, don't worry, you're not bugging me. You're asking good questions. And it's like, oh, thank you. But basically, I mean, when it came to wanting to meet like Darren Dunstan and Lisa Ortiz and any of them, my whole thing was I didn't go in being like, okay, I'm going to go in and get this person to put me on their show. No. And so many people go in with that level of like of pure ambition, and you can see it, and you don't want to be that. And I was like, even in my head, I was like, I would love for that to happen, but I don't want to be that. I don't want to go in being that. What I want more than anything is that I want to go in and I want to make a good impression. And if it's like, hey, you got a lot to learn, okay, that's fine. At least like I'm getting to meet this really incredible expert in the field and they're teaching me stuff, you know? And,
exactly. Yes. Yes. You know?
And so when I was taking these classes with the different directors, Darren, Lisa, Jennifer, Erica, it was just really about, I want to make a connection with this person. I want them to honestly tell me what they think of my abilities, what I need to change, what can be better, what's good, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then as it just so happened for Darren and Lisa, it was like, hey, I see something in you that could be good for these characters, and sent me auditions. And it's like, okay, awesome. You know? So In knowing them for long enough, it came to a point where I was able to say, hey, if you ever have projects, like if you feel like I'm doing good stuff, I'd love to get the chance to audition. But that wasn't the first thing I said to them. That was after knowing them for a while.
Right.
So it's kind of like, it's kind of like being ambitious, but not having, I guess if you not coming on too strong with the ambition, like not having, because I was actually listening to a video recently, like talked about that, like kind of not like, if you're trying to like get into something like that, if there's too much of a desperate vibe you're giving off with it, you can't get into it as naturally. You kind of have to flow with it and kind of be in the flow.
Beyond even desperation, because that's totally a thing too. You can be desperate for that.
Absolutely.
But beyond desperation, you don't want to be mercenary. That's probably, I don't know which one's worse. They're both bad. You don't want to be either. You really just want to go in without any expectations of, I want to get something from this. All that you want to get is that you want to make a bond with this person and show them your abilities and go ahead.
Kevin. Yeah, because you want to be...
I was going to say, what you just said, I was going to say a phrase that is often said out here by one of my favorite acting coaches here. Mm-hmm. When you do an audition, you're not auditioning to get the job.
Yes.
You're auditioning to create a relationship with the casting director.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Anytime I do a first audition with any studio, because recently I had started auditioning for other studios. I can't name any names, but every audition I went into, I'm like, I'm not even going to try. Like, I'm going to do my very best and put my best foot forward, but I'm not even going to put an expectation of, I hope I get this. It's like, I hope I put an audition that makes them go, oh, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what you said about the desperation thing is another thing. It's an acting teacher named Jack Plotnick, who I think is very much in the vein of Paul's caring for actors. And again, he doesn't pay me, but he actually offers a free acting/self-help book on his website. You can just download for free.
And
I'll send you a link. I'll send you a link if you want to post it with the podcast. Yeah. But he also said, when you audition, because that desperation can be felt, saying, oh my gosh, I've got rent due, I need to book this job. That's going to give off negative vibes. Mm-hmm. It just is. Yeah. And casting directors, we're all empathetic, creatures, and that they're going to feel that, like, well, shoot, is he nervous? So his philosophy is audition as if you don't need the job. You're just auditioning because you got an audition. And it's like, thanks for your time. Oh, look at that. Time for me to go. Have a great day, guys. Bye. And that's it. And then you just let it go because you have absolutely no control over it after that. And so I that's something I've been trying to get in my head, saying, I got an audition. Great. I'm just going to read it. I did it. Going to shrug, going to lean and do the power of three and be on my merry way. And that's it.
You really don't have any control. I mean, for some of these shows that Kevin and I have worked on, I mean, they must have, I know they have thousands and thousands and thousands of auditions. It's mind-boggling. So
there's a video game company I've been and they send me auditions almost every other week. Mm-hmm. And I won't say I can say the game. Smite is one of the games, and then the Paladins. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying this because I'm like, oh damn. It just is. I've auditioned for them, I think, for 3 years now. Haven't booked one job.
And it doesn't be poorly on you or on anyone.
Not at all.
The fact that you're
not at all.
The fact that they keep coming back to you saying, we want you to try this.
Right. And see, that's the thing too, I think, Dan, what you just said is that, casting directors in any arena of acting, I think, they want you to be the right person because they want to go home. They want to say, okay, we found them. Let's get out of here. They don't want to sit for hours watching people.
4,000 auditions.
Exactly.
Where's my Neo?
Exactly. They want you. And I remember reading a story about, I take that back. Jack does like these, used to do these monthly kind of intro to his acting process, charity events here in LA that, you pay $10 and he talks and it's a donation to the LGBTQ Center of Los Angeles. But there was a woman there saying, she says, look, this casting director has called me in for like 9 different series. I haven't booked anything and I'm just getting really frustrated. And he said, stop. He said, listen to what you just said. She has brought you in for 9 opportunities because she sees something. She's trying to find you work because she sees something and she believes in you. That is a gift. You know,
that's exactly it. When a casting director sends you stuff and stuff and stuff,
be excited.
They believe in you. That's yes. what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. Because again, a casting director's job, you know, like we talked earlier about Bang Zoom, where, you know, they have a casting director because other people license them. You know, there may be one lead role, but they've got to pick five people to send in. They don't have the final say in that, you know, but they're going to say, you know what, I'm going to put Kevin in here. I'm going to put Danny. I'm going to put Sean in here because I believe in them. It's not the casting director's choice in the end to pick who's going to be that part, but she goes, I believe him. I'm going to give them the opportunity to cast him. That's the thing. Give them every opportunity to cast you, and a casting director will do that for you when they like you. And if they call you in, you know, like I remember Jonathan Frakes, who was Riker on Star Trek Next Generation. I think he auditioned seven times over like 12 weeks. I mean, they just kept calling him back and calling him back, you know, and he said, but that's the process. And that means that they saw something in me, and I will go to, if I have to do 20 auditions for the same part, I will do it because that means they see something. And the other side of the coin is bad casting can kill a show. So they're having to make sure you are the right person because they're putting a lot of money into this. They're having to pay for the licensing of a show, the recording studio, the writers, all this stuff. There's a lot of money involved. So they do need to make sure you're the right person. But if they keep calling you back, then they see something. They're desperate to make sure you're the right person because they want you.
And there's as much nervousness and fear on their side as it might be on yours.
Like, yep.
100%. Like I didn't think that way at the very beginning. And then over time, I'm like, oh, you know,
they're
like
terrified.
Every interaction is professional, of course, but it's just like, oh, I get it. Yeah, you want to find the right person. You know,
yeah,
that's how it is. You know,
and now that's not to say, because obviously, there will be, you know, for the parts you got, Danny, there's probably 15, maybe 10, 15 people who didn't get it, and that is just, you know, it's nature of the game. But that doesn't, you know, that. As Mark Hamill actually once told me in a tweet, I very briefly, I got to audition for Skeletor for the new He-Man cartoon, but this was before, it was initially a non-union job. And then Netflix, in the casting process, Netflix made an agreement with SAG-AFTRA, so everything became union. And so now you have suddenly, and rightfully so, a very celebrity-filled cast. Like Henry Rollins is in, I think, as Beastman, and Mark Hamill as Skeletor. And I made a little tweet about it when they announced it. And I said, you know, I got to read for Skeletor. For 2 minutes, I was Skeletor, and it was amazing. But so if I had to lose out to Mark Hamill, I guess that's okay.
Like, I guess that's okay. Right? I can take that on the chin, you know.
He tweeted back to me and said, Kevin, opportunity, something along the lines of, Kevin, when a door closes, another one opens, onward and upward always.
He's such a gem.
And I was just like, damn it.
It's almost like if he did get that part, that would have been cool, but it's almost like that was like another, you got a unique inspiration from not getting the part.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? And when I realized, because I mean, there's been shows I've read for that I wanted desperately. I mean, I can't remember the name of the show now. It was a vampire show back at Funimation, and I so wanted it, but a little actor named Troy Baker got it before he became a voiceover video game god.
Yes.
But then when I watched the show, I realized, yeah, I wouldn't have been a good fit. I realize comes down to right casting. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of actors, maybe, you know, Danny, I read the commercial. I was called in for a commercial audition based on my demo just once in my career so far. And I read for it and the casting director liked me, but then I found the ad and I listened to it and I was like, yep, I am totally wrong for the direction they went. I absolutely would have been the wrong choice.
Yeah,
if they
I've definitely
cast me
had
in this.
Times like that where I auditioned for stuff and then I got to see who they went with. And then I was like, oh, wow, that's what they want. Oh, yeah,
yep.
That's not me. Like, so, but I was honored that they thought of me as an option. You know,
sure, absolutely.
And I guess that's the attitude you have to have that has nothing to do with you. It's just that they're looking for a certain thing. And that should kind of take some of the pressure off an audition too, because it's like, I'm going to present what I am. And if what I am with this is what they're looking for, then it'll work. And if not, then I wasn't the right fit for that.
And that's exactly. The easiest way to go through it. It's just like, it's nothing personal. You know, I mean, like it's even less
personal. It's never personal.
For filmmaking, like where they're judging your appearance and all this other kind of stuff, that can get pretty personal. But with voice acting, it's so just like, is the tone, is the voice, is the acting that's needed for this character. Is that in line with what we want? With what the
producer right. Is your performance what they heard in their head for the character? And if it isn't, it simply isn't.
Yeah, and if you're wrongly cast, that could be worse too.
Because
then if people hate that character so much, then that stops you from getting work for a while. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I put it in the hands of the director and casting director, and I trust that so two things. They know what they're looking for, or they're ready to be surprised and say, I didn't think about that. That would be a better choice. We need to go with this person.
And that's why I have such immense respect for any directors or casting directors.
As
well as to the extent that I don't like bug them too much about just asking questions or just being friendly, but it's just sort of like, I know you're busy and I know you're so busy trying to make this whole thing happen. Like, but they really know what they're doing. And I have such amount of trust and respect for them, even to the extent of like, if it's like, no, you know, I'm not right for these roles. That's fine. You know what you're doing. I'm just
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and I wanted to go back to what you said about developing a good relationship with the casting director.
Yes.
You're there because at the end of the day, they want to work with someone who they want to deal with and they want to, you know, be around. If you have a lousy personality, because I was just thinking of a student film I worked on. This was on film acting, but there was another actor who was way more experienced than me. He was in SAG. He was a bit older too. But they just couldn't stand him because he was just yelling at the crew like, those lights should have been set up earlier. And they hated the guy. They even wrote like a nasty nickname for him on the board. And they were like, fuck this guy. And with me, they were like, oh, it's been a pleasure working with you. Even though, in my opinion, not like humbleness, like I think he was like the more like classically trained actor. I was kind of starting out, but it was me that they, you know, enjoyed working with more, and that they said they'd, you know, do other projects with and stuff.
Kevin, having an acting technique doesn't mean you have to be a dick.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, because you know what? I mean, I've seen actors. I mean, we've all heard stories about actors, you know, being divas on set, you know, and that's something I try to be the most prepared. And I understand that everyone else has their particular job to do. And I just need to get the hell out of the way and let them do their job. And say, where do you want me? Do you want me right here? Am I doing a good performance? Is it perfect? Great. Thank you so much. Craft services was amazing. And I'm going to go home now, you know, because that's what you're going to get you remembered. If you're a jerk, if you get this diva attitude, no one's going to want to work with you again. Yeah. They're not going to catch
you. That's why Ed Norton lost the Hulk.
Like I've heard stories about that. About you know he.
There's a million stories out there of this kind of stuff. You know,
I think maybe the most. He has a particular process that most likely would not have fitted into the MCU. I think is probably.
Yeah.
and right now, see, I loved the Incredible Hulk. I thought, you know, I mean, I was, you know, he's definitely a tough character to crack on film, and I thought they did a really good job. I'm even one of the black sheep that liked Ang Lee's Hulk film, you know, even though it's a Greek tragedy. But you have to, you know, if you create negative memories for those who work with you, they're not going to want to work with you again. And rightfully so, you know, I mean, this is supposed to be it's a very demanding job. But it's an outlet for creativity, and creativity, I mean, for me is, I mean, I want to be able to inspire audiences. I want to be able to entertain. I want to make them think. I want to, if they hate me, they hate me out of, you know, but that's on them. But you know, I want to have fun in the process of doing it. And I want to make sure that I'm working with people all around me that are much smarter than I am to make me look good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, I mean,
yes,
you know, that's the whole, I mean, I'm so thankful for it. Like, you know, like Danny said, I think maybe agree with me that, you know, for me, because I was thrown, there weren't dubbing classes when I started. I mean, there weren't even a voiceover at the time, was still so difficult to get in. I mean, that's why you would hear the same voice going, you know, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. You would hear that exact same voice in Chicago and New York and Miami and Seattle and Portland. I mean, because it was such a tiny little niche world, you know. And so, crap, I forgot my point of why I brought that up.
Well, I think what you're saying is that for like Sean and I, like we're in this generation.
Oh, yes.
Like access to knowledge and experience. I mean, you, Kevin, along with the voice actors that had come before you just a little bit before that, were like ironing out the path.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. See, this is my old age getting to me. Yeah. I realize now I knew what anime was. I was just watching Battleship Yamamoto when I was a kid. I just thought I'm watching a cartoon, you know, or Battle of the Planet / G-Force, you know, I just was watching it. So I didn't know what that world was. And I was thrown into a process where, yes, I'm acting, but, oh, I've got to match flaps now. I've got to match. Oh, you need a hair faster, a second faster, half a second, a third of a second faster. Okay. I think I can do, you know. So it's a terrifying process, but you know, now, as you said, we have the equipment, you have the technology to do it, you know, so.
And there's more work with the internet and with streaming.
Oh, absolutely.
And everything. It's not just TV and film, you know.
More than ever. It's crazy. Yeah.
More than ever. And I think, I think even Paul mentioned this, that now that actors are, you know, because I mean, I had to do some upgrading to my system when the whole pandemic started, and Bang Zoom reached out to me and said, we're letting our actors know who have home studios, who want to build them. We will help as much as we can. So they worked with me to learn about Source Connect, you know, upgrading my computer system to make sure that I could handle running Skype and Source Connect at the same time while recording and not glitching. I mean, you know, getting my Ethernet cable hardwired in for internet access, you know, and so I think this may continue, which will again just, well, you know, as we talked about earlier, Danny, you know, that we can now work remotely with studios, and I think it will continue into after we get past this terrible pandemic that we're in.
Yeah.
So that there will be, excuse me, opportunities
more
all over the world,
you know, because the world is so much smaller than it ever was before, and there's no need for the voice acting world to be just held to each specific region. It's like, you, if there's someone that's great for the part in California for a New York dub, get them.
Exactly. And vice versa.
And vice versa, you know.
I think too that also needs to add in for the listeners who do want to be involved in this business, is that research the equipment that you do need. For my biggest thing, like I'm teaching a class in my undergrad, and one of the first things that I really want to push is that you are offering, yes, a creative service, but ultimately it's a product, and you want to make sure that you offer the best product you can, you know. So correct me if I'm wrong, Danny, please. Mm-hmm. If you've got a Blue Yeti mic, you know, with your laptop in a closet that you threw a couple of coats in, you're not quite going to get that broadcast quality that that clients need.
No,
to offer their service.
It might work for some commercials, depending on the budget for the commercial, but certainly for like animation and movies.
Oh yeah,
project. No, unfortunately,
you really have to research. You really how to build your home studio. Like I built a booth years ago, is what I did, because I was doing so much audiobooks for this company I work for, I built a sound booth, you know, just because I wanted to make sure I offered the absolute best quality, because that's going to be remembered as well. If, you know, I was talking to another actor friend of mine who said, well, don't you just hit record and whatever happens, you just send it in. It's like, no. I clean out my mistakes. I clean out my breaths. I give them 30 seconds of room tone. I want to make their job as easy as possible for what they've hired me to do.
So would you say Blue Yeti is a starter? I mean, Blue Yeti is what I'm using for this podcast right now, and I'm on my laptop. So
I will defer to Danny on that.
Yeah,
you sound fine for what you're doing right now, but if you want to get into more advanced stuff, I mean, there's definitely microphones that I can recommend that I've even...
Yeah, like Rode Podcaster, or... Because I know that's another one I've used before.
Yeah, but... let me get a name, at least. Sorry. You know, like the top of the top is going to be something like the Sennheiser.
Oh yeah.
16, but a Neumann is TLM 103 is going to be great. There's this one microphone that's really fantastic called a CM87, Advanced Audio CM87. That is a fantastic microphone. It's affordable compared to other things.
What do you use right now, Danny?
I am using a Samson large diaphragm microphone. It's the exact model. I forget the exact model. When I was talking to my engineer friends, they loved it and they said, this is fantastic. So this is the one that I use and everyone's cool with it.
That's another thing. Maybe you can, if you can expound on a little bit, if you've heard this, I have a friend of mine who is, she's an amazing voice talent. She's a full-time home voiceover actress.
Oh, really quick. I just remembered. It's a CL8 large diaphragm Samson microphone.
Okay, cool.
There we go.
Cool, cool, please cool. Continue. So what she did, she was, her business was growing. I mean, she's extremely talented and was building up, an e-learning is her kind of specialty. And what she was able to do, she found, I'm sure there's a number of companies that do this, but she was able to rent, I think she rented 4 different microphones for a week. And that, so she could try it out in her space with her voice. And she said, okay, I don't like this one. Oh, this one sounds good. That's a choice. That, you know, this one's another choice, which led her to picking, I think, is it the Shure M87,
yes.
Right?
Yes. I think it's like, but yeah, the Shure. Yeah, Shure microphones are always amazing.
She found that was fantastic for her. So that's something, you know, that people who are building their studio, please compound on that, Danny, that, you know, you have the opportunity to actually listen to what works for your voice in your space. Yeah.
When things were open, one of the things that you could do is go to, you know, the places.
Guitar Center?
All the different tech places to get equipment and try out the microphones for yourself and see how it plays for you and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, that's definitely helpful and it can definitely tell you how your voice interacts with it. But if you're building a space, if you're building a studio, you definitely want to go to a company that will let you rent microphones.
Yes.
Just like you said, for a weekend. Get several different ones. You can even get high-end ones for relatively cheap rental prices as long as you don't use it as a baseball bat and try to send it back to them. But you know, listen to it in your space and see how it is. I mean, sometimes it can just be a simple fact of, you know, the microphone is amazing, but if your space is not soundproofed properly,
yes,
it doesn't matter how good. You could get one of the microphones I just mentioned, and if your space is not set up right, it's going to sound awful.
So do you recommend like a separate room for the studio, or just like, is there a way to just isolate a certain part of a room if it's a...
So for what I did in my booth is that for the longest time, Paul was saying, you need to make a booth so that you can do commercial work more often and da da da. So I just started slowly but surely putting this together. Basically, I took a bunch of wooden doors, put them together, and then did soundproofing on the inside and on the outside of them, as well as the fact that I'm in a quiet room that doesn't have any other sound in it, so that it's sort of like a quiet space inside of a quiet space. It's quietception. And basically, you get a really great, good sounding audio quality. My audio quality right now is so because A, I'm this way instead of this way, and B, I have my fan pointed on me because I have studio lights on me, so I look nice and well lit. So if I don't sound perfect right now,
he knows the secrets for camera work.
Yes, exactly. You know? But if I don't sound perfect right now, you know, but when you listen to me on the shows that have been on Pokemon Journeys and then Yu-Gi-Oh! Brains, when you listen to my work on there, I sound good because I'm making sure my space is really good. But you know, for a lot of people, things they don't think about are like your refrigerator. If you have a heating
Yes.
And see, one great thing is that a lot of things are on smart technology now, so you can, you know, pair your refrigerator to your phone, so you can turn everything off with a single button press, or you can turn off your boiler or other things of that sort, so it doesn't make noise. Now, if you're in like an apartment in the city, right, and you have a lot of noise from your neighbors above you, below you, and to your sides and everything, you'll probably want to use like a shotgun mic, because that's going to go for a very specific part of, like, just it goes straight forward and recording, you know, directly what it's pointed at, whereas a large diaphragm mic is going to record everything, and that's what I have. So like every little noise, like any little noise in my house, you're going to hear. So I always have to make sure everything is quiet. So that's why I have to turn off my refrigerator and my boiler. But
I have been there at my first space. I know your pain, my friend. Yeah. Let me ask you this. Have you ever forgotten to turn your refrigerator back on?
Yes.
Twice.
Yes.
Twice. I lost all my food twice.
So thankfully, this was so lucky. I was just very blessed when that happened. I had to go to the grocery store, but after I finished my session, I was so tired. I was like, I got enough for breakfast in the morning. All I need is juice and like stuff. So I go to sleep, forget to turn on my refrigerator. Thankfully, there wasn't any perishables in there. So I had warm orange juice and then I went to the supermarket and it was like, fine. But basically on the outside, you can't see it because we're inside my booth right now, but on the outside of my booth, I have a gigantic white sticky board that says check mark refrigerator, check mark oil. Like that's how I roll, man.
This is what being a professional means.
That's exactly professional right here. That's
turn my damn fridge back on.
But it also must suck, like either the winter you have to turn off the heater, or if it's the summer you have to turn off like a fan or air conditioner.
I have a stock of sweatbands and wristbands because I'm usually dripping with California heat, because my little airflow system is exactly that, a very little airflow system that does not. I'm a big guy in a big booth, and if I'm in there for a 2-hour session, I'm just, you know, in a soaked t-shirt and shorts and I've got the James Hetfield 3 sweatbands, you know, kind of thing. I think it was one time I was so I have rubber flooring on that I put towels on top of, but there's a little, okay, this is so gross. I don't know why I'm telling this story, but I'm telling it anyway. There's a little sliver of that flooring, and I was doing my gesticulating, you know, with my whatever commercial or an audio or something. And I just kind of lean my hand against my wall for a second while I'm looking at the computer screen, and I hear this dink, 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 dink. And I was like, what? And I pulled my hand, it's like, oh, it stopped. Oh, I don't know what that was. And we go, dink, dink. I'm like, what the hell? And it was the sweat dripping on that one little sliver. I was like, shower time.
Yeah. Boots get very hot, especially during the summertime.
That's
what makes it hard, because it's like, you want to have the AC on, but you can't.
Nope.
So you got to deal with it. You know, if you can get a little fan for yourself, or even get a little electric fan that you can between takes turn on.
That's where I'm like, oh, air.
Yeah.
So is this something you kind of build up gradually, your studio, or is there like, do you start with like a more affordable studio and then save up for like a more advanced studio later on? Or
so there's people that buy the pre-made boxes and stuff like that. I didn't do that. I put mine together by hand, and I actually consulted Sweetwater when I was making this to make sure that everything is standard. Sweetwater is a fantastic audio company that you can get any great equipment from. They have people that always check in with you that are on standby to work with you and talk with you through about like your setup and everything. I highly recommend them. They're going to give you a lot of great advice, better advice than me, because they'll actually remember the name of stuff. Like, I forgot the name of my microphone. I'm just that. But like, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, it's good. Everyone's good with it. All right, good. I don't need to worry about it again. It's like, but it's called a what? So when you're making your booth, you want to make sure first and foremost that you don't have any like metallic or like any objects made of material that like vibrate or ring. If you want to have any material in here, like I have a little table in here, and I have a chair. They're both made of wood. You don't want anything made of metal. You know, your stand is probably going to be made of metal. Like, that's okay. But, like, you don't want any other metallic things in here. And, of course, the soundproofing has to be all over. And you have to, and preferably, you have to have plenty on the outside, because the proofing on the outside stops more noise from coming in. I mean, that's what the ridges do. The ridges catch noise and kind of phase them out inside of the ridges. I know that seems like a weird concept, but that's literally how it works. So you can build up. Like, that's the whole thing. You don't have to buy the $20,000, it's probably not that much, but multi-$1,000 pre-made booths. You don't need to do that. You can find a bunch of walls or doors. You can buy wooden sort of like panels from your local, you know, Home Depot and places like that to start putting together. You know, definitely be careful if you're using power tools and stuff like that. I know one of my voice actor friends, Cherie, she basically took like a couple of like wooden, like a table, like rack tables, and put them together and used a bunch of blankets and soundproofing panels to make her booth. I mean, there's a million ways to do it. There's a lot of things you could just Google about how to do it, but you know, always make sure that they put up a sample of their audio quality so you can hear it. That's really important, because somebody can say how to make a booth, but it's maybe not so great. But you know, and one last thing, make sure any flooring that you have is carpet. If you don't have carpet flooring, then just put down heavy blankets, like packaging blankets. That's fantastic, you know, and that should really do it.
I mean, that was my original space, is I had these, I don't know if they still make them or not, but the AudiMute sound dampening blankets, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. So I found a bunch of those on Craigslist, and I built this wooden frame, and I stapled the blankets to the inside of it. And then I got the Harlan Hogan Porta booth, the original one he did. And I put that on a music stand. And that was my booth for 2 or 3 years. I mean, again, unplugging the fridge, no AC. I mean, I'd be sitting in there, you know, but trying to sound like I'm not sweating to death. But then I got hooked up with this audiobook company that I've been with for about 8 years now and doing so much of that, that I found so I built a booth based on the plans from Dawbox.com, mm-hmm. which is basically everything is just from Home Depot. Mm-hmm. And it took me about a month to build just because I was by myself and going slow. I was still getting some boxy sound, which apparently is a common thing with these particular plans. Because I built a box when I should have built a rectangle. A fact I learned after the fact. Mm-hmm. But I went through a guy named George Widom, who is known as the VO Tech. Mm-hmm. And one of the many services he offers is to send him a sample of my audio quality and then pictures of my space. Yep. And thankfully he said, Kevin, I know this booth. I know these plans very well. I know the upgrade you did. These are the four things you need to get and you'll be fine. Yeah. So I put in a huge bass trap and some wall paneling and it fixed everything. But you know, that it was about, I'd say about $1,300 it cost me to build the whole thing, but I love it. It's been my workhorse. It's heavy as hell, but you know, mm-hmm. Now my dream is to get one of those thousand. I would love to get a Studio Bricks. I think those are gorgeous. The one I want is about $11,000, but that's for the end of the year after I, you know, book my series regular animation
Absolutely.
Cartoon.
Yeah.
or that one national commercial that will cover my bills for the year.
Yeah, for multiple years, right? And really quick, mine had the boxy issue too. You can probably tell from the way that this looks, it's curved. I positioned the walls. I used more than four walls. I used five, so that way I'm able
Interesting.
To have a more interestingly shaped booth, basically. And I also have a little piece of
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, basically, I don't have the exact name of it, but I got Amazon. Again, I'm terrible with names, but basically, it's not a box that makes the audio sound boxy. But what it is that it's like a curtain that prevents the audio from getting like stuck in like the box sort of pattern that it might if it were just a regular box kind of thing. It also softens it a bit too, because when I didn't have this on it, the audio just sounded a little too sharp for my liking, but that might have had to do with the microphone or whatever. But when I installed this on it, it sounds really soft. It sounds really great without sounding like too, it doesn't sound muffled. It doesn't sound any like kind of way. It's really good. So,
and if I can ask you, I guess the one criticism I'd always heard about these shields is just access for your eye line for your copy.
How do I get around that?
So yeah.
Basically, I usually stand when I am doing my stuff, but if you can't really see this too
much. Oh, yeah.
Can you see this? Hold on. I'm trying to turn it on so you can see. I have a monitor here.
And oh, wow.
I put my copy on the computer. I'm talking to you on my computer right now.
Right.
I put my copy on the computer. I use an HDMI link to put it onto my monitor. And then this way, when I'm here, I can just look to the right and I see my copy right there.
And you're not straining your eyeballs trying to do the whole. Yeah.
Because that would be extremely awkward. That was a huge concern that I had while I was doing this. Another thing that I could do is that if I'm sitting, then I can take this and I can bullet upward and lean it up so my eyes are looking up and I see it that way too.
Nice.
So I've made this space very versatile with depending on what I need. So if it's like a show where, you know, they expect me to do a lot of lines at once and I can't really like memorize all of it, then I'd try to do sitting where I can just see it this way and do it like that. Or if it's something where it's like, you know, I can glance and I absorb my line and then do it like that, I have my thing here, and that's how I do it. You know,
it's always good to have it on a screen, I guess, rather than printing it out. Yeah,
you can use paper. This is just my method. This is what works for me.
Yeah,
you know, everybody has a different way that works.
Yeah, I went to using my tablet and a screen because I just couldn't afford all the ink. I was printing everything. I don't know if Danny's had that same issue. When I was doing audiobooks, when I first started doing audiobooks, I mean, I was going through ink every week. I was like, I've got to do something different. So I bought a little tablet and that, you know, solved that pretty quick. But again, it's whatever works. We are totally hijacking.
Oh, that's fine. No, I was actually thinking, I was thinking it's good that you're sometimes asking questions too, because you're asking things I wouldn't have thought of, because like you know about these certain things I don't necessarily know about because I'm still getting star was.
Right. Well, because we're very lucky because, you know, I love the fact that Danny is not just an actor, but an engineer as well. So that's, you know, that's definitely, we've got to pick, got to get that the free little tips and tricks that we can get out yeah. of him for to making us sound amazing.
But that's what I'm noticing is that, like, a lot of people, like, in media and stuff, is like usually work on both sides, like kind of like editing and like also like acting, because I guess it's like it's good to be flexible in the field, because like it's, you know, you might get one gig and then there's not another, like me, I'm also like I edit another podcast, that's another thing I'm doing that's media related, and yeah. I've done like production assistant kind of work and stuff like
I guess that. You know, I'm the same way. Most of my work, I mean, you know, again, because I have not been as strong as I should be, and I'll be the first one to admit it on my audition hustle, but I'm also now I am not a trained engineer like Danny here. I do very basic proofing, and I can take out breaths and clicks and pops, and that's about it. But my majority of my work right now is editing other narrators' work. Mm-hmm. But I think you bring up a good point, Sean, about, yes, now that we can do voiceover at home, but that has added a absolutely necessary skill for the actor, is you have to be an engineer as well.
Yeah.
You have to know technically how to record great audio. And like, if I can ask Sean, what do you use to edit? What DAW do you use?
I mean, I'm still using Audacity right now, but I've used like Pro Tools and stuff before, but for a podcast, it's usually kind of simple. So I use Audacity.
Okay. Right, and how about you? What do you use, Danny?
I use Adobe Audition. I was basically taught how to do everything, you know, in the Adobe Cloud Suite, and that's what I use. And I, for a lot of my like auditions, I just do punch and roll, where basically I just keep running.
Right. Oh yeah. Love.
Yeah. You know that technique. So yeah. Basically, and you know, so if I am doing an audition, I'll do what I'm doing with you guys here. Well, I'll bring my computer here, so that way I can just kind of do this quickly. But when I'm doing an actual session with somebody, I want to make sure there's no extra sound at all, because I'm not going to be the one fixing the audio. And sometimes my computer fans can go off. So But I move my computer out of the booth completely, so that way there's no extra sound. I have my cable set up. I drilled holes so that I can move my cables out and into over to my work desk.
Oh wow.
I'll show you. So that way my computer exists on a desk, and then I have the image going to my TV here. So
gotcha.
Really quick, I just want to show you this thing, because I got this a while ago, so I'd forgotten the name of it.
Oh yes.
The AO-302, and it is a fantastic, you can even see it has 4.5 stars on Amazon. A lot of those box kind of things that you put around your microphone, they'll have bad ratings on them, and they do tend to like not be great, because they'll make you sound too boxy. This is great.
Right.
It's a curve, and it creates that curve. Like, when you're dealing with sound, the less boxy and the less like restrained kind of space you have, the better it is. The ideal shape is like a curve. That's what you want. And this creates a beautiful sound, at least from my microphone.
And you would recommend Adobe over Pro Tools, right? So
No, they're both great. I mean, like, I know how to use it. I was trained how to use After Effects, Audition, all that kind of stuff. I know how to use Adobe, and their stuff is great. But Pro Tools is fantastic. Like, so many studios are...
Well, that's the industry standard, really. Exactly. You know, like, I started... actually, most of my, and still right now, I use, though I haven't done the whole suite, I'm at Adobe Audition CS6, but you know, it, for what I need to do, that's, you know,
it's got everything you need,
everything, except for the punch and roll, which I was, you know, because I know that was, because they took that out like in CS3, and who knows why. I remember reading reviews saying, why would you take out this function that hundreds of thousands of people use, you know, though, because I think Audacity just put it in last year.
Audacity is amazing. I haven't touched it in a long while.
It's a great freebie, I think, to start with. Like the two I'm, you know, like when I'm teaching next month, I'm going to say, because I'm having an engineer friend from Bang Zoom come in to do some dubbing stuff. Oh, but fantastic. we're going to talk about, you know, because we can't ask these kids to buy stuff. You know, these are poor college kids, you know, but Audacity is great to start with, you know. But like I just jumped into learning about Reaper.
Oh, I was going to bring that up. Reaper is another good freeware. Yeah,
I'm really excited about Reaper. I follow, you guys probably know Mike Delgadio, the Booth Junkie. Mm-hmm. I mean, for $60, since I'm not quite earning more than $20,000 a year because there's two different licenses, but for $60, I couldn't beat it. And so I'm really digging that one a lot. But right now, my workhorse is still Adobe Audition. And what you asked, Sean, I think it's just personal preference. Like Danny said, I mean, it happened to be what he was brought up on in his education. Me, I got mine. I started with Adobe 1.5. As someone, you know, at the time, let me borrow their copy, and I just said, okay, what does this button do? Okay, well, I guess I can do that, you know. And I just happened to stick with it, you know.
Yeah, well, I have Windows, so I think the Adobe would be better, because I think Pro Tools is mainly Mac, like this would use, right?
You know, well, that's a question for Danny.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not intimately familiar with Pro Tools. Every setup I've seen has been on a Mac, but I'm not going to say it's totally exclusive to that.
I've always been a PC guy myself. It just happens to work, right. You know. I know what button to push to get me to record. That's exactly what I know.
I mean, I've always been in the creative, like filmmaking world, and that generally uses Macs. But there's plenty of PC users for that as well.
Right.
But yeah, no. So any setups that I've seen have generally been on Macs. I'm not going to say that they're better for this sort of thing. No, because there's plenty of PCs that can do this and do it faster too. So
I mean, it's all ones and zeros in the end to me. So exactly. You know.
Yeah, and I understand. But one thing I'll say about Adobe though, and this is a very recent development, is the Adobe Max. What that is that that's a set of educational videos about how to use the programs that you are licensing from Adobe. So for instance, if you know you get Adobe Audition, right, then there's a bunch of Adobe Max classes that you can take about how to use Audition, and these are made by either industry experts or the people that actually make the programs, and they're talking about how to use it and what to do and all that kind of stuff, like the best way to maximize their use. So that's one great advantage I would give to Adobe, which is that they have lessons on how to use their stuff. It's called
Adobe fantastic
Max. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to, I think that's what I'll look into, like for an upgrade in the future.
You know, and Adobe, I think that's a key, what Danny just said too, is that in, especially on both on the technical side, as you have to be the engineering actor, as well as actor, it's always going to be continuing education. I'm trying Reaper. So I've been watching, just like same thing with Adobe Max, I'm watching Reaper videos galore saying, oh, I can do this. I can't do that. Well, you know, kind of thing.
Say, oh yeah, that's what I was thinking when I saw it. Both of you guys in the class, that like, because you guys have done like the more known stuff, but you're still taking classes and you're still learning. Like that, you got to always view yourself as the student.
I think for me, it comes down to that motto my teacher had, is that your competition is working harder than you. They're taking that extra class. They're saving that extra $100 toward a new demo. They're, doing their marketing every 3 months. You have to stay. I just read a quote. I forget who the actor is. It says, our job is to audition. Our job is to stay relevant. And you have to work at that. You need to build that professional reputation. Like, I mean, I did a job this past week on an anime that, I don't want it to come across as bragging. It was just, this is what's starting to happen. I mean, after 15 years of doing this, I'm kind of, now this is a combination of elements though, but I didn't audition for the show. They just said, okay, we're going to give you this part because one, they know me, they've heard me audition for years. So again, this is creating that relationship with the casting director that they're going to remember your audition, saying he did this voice for that character that wasn't right for this, but I just got this show and we've got to cast it quickly. I think he'd be perfect for this. Let's send it to the licensing company. They like him. He's in, you know? That's an added element of being that constantly ready, trained professional. You have to be a trained professional in this industry, because like I said, I mean, because again, keep in mind that, you know, we're online. I've done a couple of video games for a company in China.
And I was thinking, like, even with COVID, Like that doesn't stop this kind of stuff. Like, cause you were talking Absolutely about Alfred Hitchcock radio show. I'm not sure if it was before we started recording or not, but you said that you were doing that play for Alfred Hitchcock. Right. It was on radio. Yeah. It's like, that's one of the good things about stuff like this is like, you can keep doing it even when there's a pandemic.
Oh, that's why the voiceover world is I think overall doing just fine because, you know, we've gotten to that level where actors can offer that broadcast quality and can be directed online. Like I said, I've done a couple of video games for a company in China, so I'm having to work around their time zone. But that's the added element of competition. Let's say I went to do an audition for a commercial here. I might be up against 1,000 other people, maybe 500 other people, right? Because now we're online, I'm up against hundreds of thousands of people around the world. So that's why you have to really put the time, energy into your equipment, to your engineering training, to your continuous acting training. This is not a cheap industry to get into. Yeah. You know, I got
that's what I was going to say. Like, it sounds like you kind of have to spend a lot of money to make
money. Yeah. I mean, if you want to compete in this business, because again, it comes down to why should somebody spend money on you? What do you offer? Not just as a creative artist, but what kind of quality of sound am I going to get from you? Can I use it in my commercial, or am I going to hear dogs or, you know, barking in the background and trucks? Is it going to be staticky? Can I not edit it? Do you sound like I edited an audiobook one time from obviously someone very new who didn't understand, in my opinion, what professionalism was. She literally hit record, and whatever happened during her recording, she left in, she hit stop, and she sent it in. So I got her drinking, I got her burping, dogs barking in the background, I got her repeating the same
sentence. She just assumed they'd take care of it all? Or?
Yeah, she said, well, I'm just the voiceover. They're gonna do all the cleanup. Mm-hmm. Well, I had to spend extra. So that made my job more difficult because, well, I mean, I got paid for the extra hours, but now they have to charge the client more money saying, well, you know, we had to spend more time on it because of this. And the client goes and come back and say, well, wait a minute, why do we pay more money? So, well, the narrator you picked, we didn't realize, didn't know that she needs to send in. Now, you know, we're talking.
It kind of leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth too.
Oh, like, absolutely. I doubt we will ever cast her again because she made our job harder so some of the clues for me is that she doesn't understand the engineering side because I'm going to guess she was at a kitchen table because I heard dump trucks in the background. I heard planes. I heard animals barking and cats meowing and all this stuff. You know, just the burping and just saying, oh, excuse me, pausing and then to continue recording. I mean, it was gross. And I mean, if I was in charge of the company, I said, nope, no more auditions for her. Nope, absolutely not. Because we want to work with professionals who want to present. I mean, think about it. If you do any homework assignment you've done in school, you know, are you going to send in a paper that you made all your notes on and, you know, you change sentences and block it? No, you send in the pristine, beautiful, this is what I'm going to be graded on. Okay. Well, you know, so like when I joined this audiobook company, they told me up front that a lifespan of a narrator is about 2 years because publishers want different voices. Right. I'm going into my 9th year working for them. And I truly believe it's because I put in the extra time to make sure that to the best of my ability, because I've made mistakes, I've made tons of mistakes, but to the best of my ability, I send in the quality audio work that I want to make their job as easy as possible. To say, okay, we just need to clean up a couple of things here, put the spacing because publishers didn't tell us they wanted this. And now we have the project and it's done. And let's say Kevin did such a great thing. Here's another book for just give him that book. He can do the book now, you know? So I think being professional and offering the best quality end product that you can offer will get you the professional reputation to say, hey, we remember him because Sean did a damn good job.
Yeah.
You know, let's put him on the short list.
Yeah, and I was thinking of the Stanislavski quote I said about I didn't exactly quote him, but like I kind of paraphrased what he said about empathy and everything.
Yeah.
I was just thinking like you got to have empathy for the other people.
Right. You're part of the team. You're working
with and understand what they're doing and how you have to make their job easy too.
Exactly. If you can make their job super easy, and that you and the client says, wow, this was amazing. And you got delivered so quickly. So, well, we have a good team. Because that's what you're part of a team.
So any final thoughts or things you guys like to say that maybe we didn't cover before we wrap up?
Would you like to go, Kevin? I got a couple of things, but
well, I'm just going to say I'm so honored to be allowed to chat with both you and the great Danny Kramer here. This has been really exciting. Just some of the things, like what I just said. If you want to work professionally, be a consummate professional. Learn how to do. There's three sides to this, in my opinion. There's the acting side, the engineering side, and then the business side. You have to learn all three. And in any arena of acting, it's not a sprint. This is a marathon. It will take time. I mean, I've been doing anime for 15 years now, and I'm still learning, and I'm still pushing to get, you know, the roles that I can sink my teeth into and be remembered for. And I just want to make sure that I'm doing, that I'm bring that my process of bringing a character to life will resonate with people and entertain, excite, sadden, piss off, whatever. I just want to make sure that the journey I go through to do that is the journey that the audience enjoys. And I think that should be a goal for every actor.
For me, basically everything that I talked about here, and let me put my headphones back on. It's so weird doing this on my headphones. Basically, everything that I learned here was not something that I just like knew. Well, nobody magically comes out of here knowing exactly everything. I've had so many conversations with incredible experts, Erica Schroeder, Lisa Ortiz, Darren Dunstan, my colleagues, Barrett Letty, Luis Alfonso, Rachel Slotke, people that have shared their knowledge with me. And that's a huge part of it, the community. Getting to know the voice acting community and learning from them and then paying it forward and then teaching other people things that they can learn. And then also just knowing for yourself that it's always going to be a learning experience. There's always more to learn. So, you know, big shout outs to all of the voice actors that have taken the time to share their knowledge with me. And I'm happy to share it with others and share it forward in this podcast. Sean, thank you so much for asking me to come on here. Kevin, I mean, you are just so awesome. I look forward to keep to having more conversations with you.
Absolutely.
Well, you as well, Sean. I mean, really, and it's great to make friends in this industry because a lot of it can seem kind of like isolated because we come into to the booth and do it ourselves. And then it's like making connections. It's like, one, know what connections to make. Two, be good about making the connections. Be a good person and don't be mercenary. Be like, I want to make a bond with this person so that we can be there for each other and support each other. And then lastly, just have fun, you know, and just know that you're not alone. There's always people you can talk to and get advice from and reach out to for knowledge and resources. So
well said. Very well said, sir.
Yeah. Thank you guys. And I have to say this was a great conversation too. I like talking with both of you guys and definitely we should stay in touch and all that. And a lot of things I learned from what you guys were saying that I'm definitely going to look more into and like a lot of good tips. And I think the business section is the area I'm going to try to focus on with like voice acting and the show as well. And with like, just like
it is the voiceover business. You have to know the business side or you're going to get lost in the shuffle and get chewed up and spit out and tossed aside. Yeah. And it doesn't take that much to learn. It's just, you know, there's a ton of great books out there. Just, it's about educating yourself. And I mean, like I said, I spent 3 years just reading everything I could, every voiceover book, websites, forums, reaching out to other actors, you know, asking, do you do voiceover? Oh, you don't. Have you tried looking into it? Oh, where do you look? You know, or that kind of thing. So,
and I spent years just learning acting casually because I enjoyed it. But then when I started really, you know, having people be like, you should really go into voiceover. I think you have a talent for this. Having the talent just wasn't enough. That was the first indicator that it's like, okay, I could try for this. But I spent 5 years learning. I spent 5 years learning voice acting on top of my acting skills that I already had before I even thought about trying to like get booked for something serious like a cartoon or a serious commercial. This all started happening for me in the last year and a half of like really being put out there. But I've been spending years learning this with, you know, with people not knowing anything about me because I wasn't putting myself out there. this, you know, so it's, Kevin said it earlier, this is a long game. It's the long haul, and you got to be okay about that. You're not going to necessarily get success tomorrow. That can happen for some people, but
it does. Absolutely.
But more often than not, it's the long game. It's a long haul, and just be patient with yourself and just love it. Really, really love it. And have, you know, it's a part of it, you know,
and that commitment will always lead to success. Now, that definition of success may change. I never thought I'd do hundreds of audiobooks, but that is part of my voiceover success, and I'm very proud of that fact. So I don't know, Sean, I would love to know, Danny, do you have any social media that people can follow you on to find out where you're going to be heard on? Is that okay, Sean?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll start by just saying my social media page is, my primary one that I'm using right now is my Danny Kramer at Danny Kramer VO on Twitter. You can follow me on there. And then on Instagram, I don't even know what my Instagram name is. What is it? I'm terrible with names, but Danny Shack 27. You can follow me there on Instagram. And those are my two primary ways to reach me.
So. Twitter and Instagram is the same thing for me. They're both at Kevin M. Connolly. And my voiceover website is 315studio.net. And I try to, it's in a really crappy state right now, but I try to post any new announcements on there as well. So please feel free to follow me.
See, he's good. He at least knows the name of his social media thing.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things I learned, I took a social media for actors class real quick about 4 years ago. And one of the things is they said was that you want to make sure your fans can find you across the board. So for me, I deleted everything I had because I was like KMC315 on Twitter. I was KM Connolly on Instagram. I was K-Man on Facebook. Got rid of all that. And so now just Kevin M. Connolly. You want to find me? Just punch in that name and you'll find me.
I'm going to have to take that class.
it was mind-blowing what they told me about social media. It hurt my brain, but I'm trying to
That's good. I want knowledge there. That hurts my brain.
Gosh, yeah. It was
working out, right?
Exactly. Something. It's doing something.
And I guess I'll have, unless did you have something else you want to add? Or?
No.
Okay, yeah. Well, I guess I'll close out by just giving my social media for the podcast first. So Facebook BSing with Sean K. That's BS. Whatever this thing is, the asterisk or apostrophe and ING, and then with SEANK. That's the show. It's on Facebook, Twitter. It's BSing with Sean K. too. And you can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and you can watch the videos on YouTube. That's been a recent thing I've been doing. This is episode 124. So it's been going a while.
I've got to catch up.
Yes, it's been quite a variety, but like all kind of like people, I guess, doing their passions that are kind of like, I guess, outside the 9-to-5. Yeah.
They're really good. Really good.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks. And I also have my actors page, Sean Neese, actor and voice actor. And yeah, you can add me on SEANKNEESE as long as you're not like a weirdo or anything. Like you're not going to do anything creepy or anything like that. You can add
me. Damn, now I can't follow you. Okay. Right. That Danny, we're screwed.
Right? Always against the creeps and the weirdos.
Yeah.
You know what? Well, thank you, Sean.
You guys are cool. You're weirdos in a good way. Cool.
Absolutely.
Oh, we're the good weirdos. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Good. Yeah.
Totally.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, I'll catch you on the next one.
BSing with
who?
BSing with
what?
BSing with Sean K. BSing with
who?
BSing with
what?
BSing with Sean K. BSing.